If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
I was being abused by my step-granddad, and my stepmom caught it happening. She took me home, told my dad, and then my dad confronted me. And then he said to me, right, you're not going to go out and speak to anyone about this.
In your experience, what are some of the biggest challenges survivors face when trying to speak out about the trauma? Isn't it true that if somebody is abusing someone, it's more likely that they have been abused in their life?
So my dad died from a heart attack June 1st, 2017, and it just happened out of nowhere. But after I broke my silence, 6 to 8 months after he passed away, I then find out from his sister that he was abused too, growing up, by the same man that abused me.
I want to get some tips and tricks from you on how to break that silence.
Telling your story will not only help you to break through the chains that have been holding you back for so long, but it will also allow you to help that one person out there that needs it the most. And that one person out there that needs it the most will be the past version of you.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Perry Power is an inspiring author, entrepreneur, and passionate advocate for survivors of child sexual abuse. Best known for his powerful book, Breaking the Silence, Perry courageously shares his own story of overcoming trauma to inspire others to confront and heal from their experiences. As a motivational speaker and co-founder of initiatives that raise awareness about abuse, Perry dedicates his life to empowering survivors, encouraging open dialogue, and fostering resilience. In today's conversation, we delve into his inspirational journey and hear him candidly address what is often misunderstood about the cycle of childhood abuse, especially when it occurs within a family. His insights challenge societal norms and offer hope for change and healing. I know this is a difficult conversation for some people to listen to, so I just want to warn you ahead of time, but I think you will enjoy my conversation with Perry Power. Thank you so much for joining me on Misunderstood today from the UK, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Just outside of London.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you. I really appreciate you being here. I found you, just from going through Instagram, and somehow your page came up on my For You or whatever. And I didn't know who you were. I didn't know your story. And all of a sudden I found that I was in tears, totally. I'm somebody who has not been through what you have been through, but you struck a chord in me. So the feelings have been similar. I started my podcast because I believe that people's story, you know, that's the most important thing they have. It's what they own. It is what makes them unique. It is the only thing that can either keep you in silence and fear and shame, or it could be the one thing that sets you free. So when I heard you say those words, I was like, this is my guy. I need to hear a story. When I heard your story, it was so powerful. It made such an impact. And I think it's so important for people to understand what it is like, what it has been for you to break your silence, and how you are now on the path to helping other people do that in the world of trauma and sexual abuse, especially of the generational kind. So I want to get right into your story, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So you have a book that's come out, and it's called Breaking the Silence. I want to talk to you about your story, how you came about writing this book.
So Breaking the Silence came to me, we'll jump ahead quickly, when I was watching the Jeffrey Epstein documentary. Have you seen it?
I have, yeah.
Yeah. So it was a couple of episodes into it, and one of the girls, one of the survivors, was like, I couldn't speak up. You know, I was sort of being manipulated and being controlled by this man who was super powerful, and who am I? I'm nobody. And she's like, I couldn't break my silence. And as soon as she said those words, it was like the universe just spoke to me. You got to do a book. You just got to do it, right? Wow. And now if we backtrack, the reason why I wrote the book about breaking the silence and the message behind it was because I was sexually abused within my family, and it was by my step-granddad. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know how long it lasted for, probably a couple of years-ish, but I don't remember when it started. But I remember snippets of it happening. And then I remember, interestingly enough, I don't actually remember the last time it happened. This is a recollection for my stepmom. So I was being abused by my step-granddad, and my stepmom caught it happening. And then she went out of the room, and she called me into the kitchen, and she took me home, told my dad, and then my dad confronted me. Now, my dad was a Cockney geezer who controlled things, who approached things through quite a confrontational manner. So when he asked me about what happened, he did it in quite a confrontational way, and he made me sort of feel like I had did something wrong. And then he said to me, right, you're not going to go out and speak to anyone about this. You're not going to tell your biological mother. You're not going to tell your friends at school. You're going to keep this to yourself. We don't want a black cloud over the family name. And that's what he said. And that silence lasted about 12 years.
So I want to quickly ask you about that moment when your stepmom brought you into the kitchen and was asking you about this. Did you feel shame at that moment? Did you feel like, oh my God, I've been found out? Were you nervous about what your step-granddad might say? Did he know that he was found out? Like, what was going on in that moment?
I remember it was a mix of emotions, because I remember thinking that my dad was completely overreacting, because he said, you're never going around there again. Mm-hmm. And then I got pissed at him, because, you know, then my dad became the villain of the story, not my step-granddad. But I do recall a few years later, he told me one evening that he had gone round there and confronted him. But he didn't share any other details other than that. But I remember a short while later, I told my mother, who at that point I used to go and see once a month. And I remember lying in bed, and she was very, very upset. I think I just told her at that point. And I remember saying to her, she was crying, but Mum, I enjoyed it. And I remember those words coming out of my mouth, like, Mum, I enjoyed it. Don't get so upset. And as I grew up and I started to reflect on the abuse that happened, those words that I said as a child really stuck with me, because that definitely brought the shame into my life. I was a kid that enjoyed being abused by his granddad. I can't tell anybody this, you know?
Right, right. Wow. And then what was your relationship with your step-granddad like after that, after you were pulled away?
I never saw him again, never spoke to him again. And about 2 years later, he died from a heart attack at work.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So, it's so like powerful and upsetting what you went through. And I know this is hard for people to even be listening to, because if you've been through something like this, this obviously strikes a chord, and it's something that brings up a lot of feelings. If it's something we haven't been through, it's terribly, it's just so upsetting to listen to, especially when it comes from somebody within the family. I mean, are there statistics that you're familiar with about how often this happens within families, and people are not reporting it? Like, how often does this happen?
Well, I know that, I can't remember the specific statistic, but I know it's over 80% of kids who have gone through abuse or abused by someone that they didn't know. And it's not, you know, there's no specific, here's the thing, there's no specific statistics on intrafamilial abuse, because that is going to be extremely difficult to monitor. Because out of all sexual abuses, none of them you don't really want to talk about, but you don't want to talk about being molested by your dad or something happening by your brother. That's the shit you don't want to talk about. So for them to actually bring out statistics that are near accurate on that is, I don't see happening, but I think we can confidently assume that the majority of all of this happens within the family, because kids grow up within families. And if they're not family, it's a very close family friend.
Right. Talk about what that's like to live in silence all these years until you do decide to talk about it. You know, for you and your experience, was it something that was always in the back of your head? Did it affect your relationship with whoever you chose to be sexual with later? Like, how did that manifest in you after, as you grew up?
I think growing up, for the most part, I put it to the back of my head. I think it might have sort of warped my certain viewpoints on how I am meant to be and masculinity and things of that nature. But it wasn't like an everyday thing front of mind. It was very much in the back of my mind. And it would only be when things pop up in the world, like my dad maybe saying something or watching a film, that would then bring it to the forefront. So there's definitely that. But as I got older and I move out of London, I change college, and I'm with all of these new people. And I remember saying to myself, right, I don't want to be the Perry Power who was in London, because a Perry Power that was in London was still a virgin, didn't have many friends. He really wanted to be social, but he didn't have the confidence, blah, 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 blah. Now, when he goes to this new college, he's going to create this new character. He's going to create the Perry Power 2.0. And he's going to be the guy who's like kind of like a Stifler from American Pie, right? And we're talking maybe 13 years ago now, probably. And so I definitely think that there's a link from that to the abuse, because many years later, that's when Lewis Howes brings out his book, Mask of Masculinity. And when I saw about all the different masks that he references, that's what made me realize that it wasn't in my language, in my way, I created a character, but in that sense, I created multiple different masks to wear in order to fit into these situations where I weren't reminded of being a boy that was abused.
Right. Yeah. In your experience, what are some of the biggest challenges survivors face when trying to speak out about the trauma? Like, why, for someone like me, you would think, well, why don't you just tell someone? But obviously it's harder than that. Explain that.
Yeah, because put it this way, when you've gone through abuse, a lot of times it's when you was a kid growing up into teenage years. And then usually there's a cut off and then you become an adult for whatever reason, you move away or whatever it is. And then you live in your own mental world about what happened. Nine times out of 10, there's shame, there's fear, there's guilt. So you create your own worldview, which that is very much part of. And when it comes to telling someone else, one of your biggest fears is them mirroring back to you that world that you've got inside of here. And you don't want that. You're scared shitless about someone saying, are you sure it happened that way? You know, why did your dad do that to you? And they don't even want to open up that door. And my dad, you know, big part of the story is that after my dad died from a heart attack June 1st, 2017, and just happened out of nowhere. But prior to that, he became an alcoholic and had high blood pressure and things of that nature. But after I broke my silence, 6 to 8 months after he passed away, I then find out from his sister that he was abused too, growing up by the same man that abused me. And that's what really started the whole purpose journey that I'm on, but also made me really realize with proof that you can live and die in silence. And many people out there are, because they don't want to step into the world of the unknown. And a lot of the survivors that's in my circle, the phrase that they use the most when it comes to speaking out is being afraid of being seen. And I think that's the best way to sort of wrap this all up under one sort of phrase.
Right. What was it like when you eventually told more people in your family about what happened? I mean, I know the story from reading some of what you've talked about, but about how you were not the only one.
Yeah, so I knew growing up that my cousin was also abused, because she would tell me snippets. And then when I broke my silence and then I watched the video, she then realized it happened more than just the one time. Then I find out from my auntie, my dad's sister, that it happened to my cousin, yes, but more than I thought, it happened to her. And it also happened to my dad. And that's when we realized that there was this sort of spider web of abuse going on within the family. But then also much later on, I then find out from my step-granddad's family, and they're all Irish, for the Irish side, that his daughters reached out to me to say that he abused all of his kids too. So, you know, we have that whole, and I was living in fear when I brought my book out that his family might see my story and see the book, see the media and the publications, and then come out to get me and maybe try to sue me for defamation or whatever it's going to be. Mm-hmm. I was living in that fear. But then for them to come out and say, hey, me too, me too, me too, it was just further sort of like, when there's someone that's abused within a family, very rarely is it just the one person.
Right. And also, isn't it true that if somebody is abusing someone, it's most more likely that they have been abused in their life?
I would say so. From my personal opinion, it's more so a quote unquote learned behavior or coming from a wound that they haven't healed. My step-granddad was abused himself. I found out later on in mm-hmm. the Catholic Church, and so were his siblings. And, you know, he grew up, didn't get help, and he passed that on to people that he loved.
Wow. So were you ever able to have any closure? Did anyone ever say that he had mentioned that he had done this, that he felt a certain way about it? I mean, was there any kind of closure beyond you having to get your own help separately?
No, not in that sense. I found out from his daughter that he denied it the whole time. And his daughter says that, you know, she confronted him about it, and he just said, no, it didn't happen. No, it didn't happen. And you know, I never got closure in that sense. So the only path that I could have taken was it being within my control and giving myself that closure.
Yeah. And I'm also curious, you know, so many people think that bad people or people that have some extreme issues with sexual abuse of others look a certain way, right? I mean, what was your relationship with him? Was he a relatively normal guy? Did he come off as a very friendly, loving, affable person to everyone?
No, and I tell you what, when it comes to intrafamilial abuse, those family members, it is far from the usual quote-unquote suspects that you might imagine. Like, it's the people that you would never even believe. My step-granddad was a normal-looking guy. He would take me to the pub and let me drink his Guinness when the barman wasn't looking. You know, he positioned himself as the, we call it grooming, of course, but he positioned himself as like the hero of my story, just a regular guy.
Right. And I know from what I've read about you that you said that you felt like this was just a way that he was showing love and affection, at least at the beginning. So how did you kind of grapple with that going through your own personal growth of knowing now in turning the tables as you get older and have relationships with people and eventually maybe your own children or young children in general? How do you make sense of what real loving connection is that's not abusive?
I don't know. I think most survivors who've gone through something, they've got leftover residue. And, you know, I have a charity in the US and who I've co-founded it with Juliet. We talk about this. We actually had a conversation about this ages ago when it came to things like sexual fetishes and things of that nature. And, you know, in the bedroom and the thing that survivors in the back of their head are turned on by it, but they don't ever want to talk about it or do it because they know it's linked to the abuse.
Right.
Right. Which I find that fascinating. That's a whole different topic. But when it comes to close relationships, I personally never had a problem with connecting with partners, like in a non-abusive way, you know, just like in a normal way. I'm a very, very loving guy, very, very affectionate. I think that this is an assumption, but I very much struggle to get connection in sex. For me, sex is very, very sort of transactional. And I think that has been linked to the sexual shit that I was part of from the ages of 4 and 5, you know, linked back to then, whilst the brain's even developed, it's in development, but before you can actually be mature enough to understand what's going on.
Right. Wow. Okay, so I think it's important to ask the question, how, in your experience, is it, how can we break these chains of silence? What are some steps that people can take if they are listening to this? They're living in silence. And by the way, I want to make this conversation a little bit bigger, too, than just, you're hiding sexual abuse. If you are in any sort of trauma and you feel silenced by anything that is going on, I want to get some tips and tricks from you on how to break that silence.
I think the ultimate goal of breaking the silence in the safest way is to come to a place of having ownership over your story. Right. So, and I think that the steps to get there is to break the silence to yourself first in as many different ways as possible before you tell someone else. Because what happens is if you've been living in silence for 14 years and then you're like, right, I need to tell somebody about this. And then you tell your partner and then they happen to pause for 4 seconds too long or they say the wrong thing. You're now going to associate your truth with rejection. It doesn't matter if that's the actual truth or not, but you've perceived it that way. And what that basically comes down to is you have a lot of sort of, you're wanting their approval. You're wanting to be believed. And we should be, because probably going through the abuse, we weren't believed. But I think that's very, very dangerous because their opinion and their reaction is completely outside your control. So I say, before you tell anybody, break the silence to yourself, write a poem, write a song, write a book, tell yourself in the mirror, just do things where you're actually vocalizing it or you're communicating it for an artistic form. And what you'll find is that if you do this 13 different ways and on step number 14, you tell someone, you tend them from a place of power. And that can be about domestic violence. That can be about sexual abuse. That can be about being diagnosed with cancer and you haven't told anyone yet. You know, that could be any type of trauma. I think the steps are equally the same.
Yeah. And I've heard you say this really eloquently, like when you're writing a song, that's telling a story in an artistic way. When you form clay, you know, whatever it is that is important to you, that is a way of breaking your silence and telling your story, right?
Yeah, correct. Like going to that clay thing, if you might, because some people are like, why would you go clay molding? Why would you make a cup? Well, you know, what is it? And then like, yeah, but if you are thinking about your story and you are allowing it to flow, because energy is energy. If you're allowing that energy to flow into the mug, you come out of the session, you now have a physical representation of your story. Mm-hmm. And that's the first step towards freedom, you know?
Right. So take me back then to you tell your girlfriend first, and then you now are huge on social media and with this platform of breaking your silence. So tell me how that went from just telling one person, who ultimately was a great person to tell because it sounds like she was very supportive and loved you no matter what. And I know that fear of like, they're not going to like me anymore. They're not, you know, everything that I think about myself in my head, they're going to be able to verbalize or use against me when they're mad at me or tell my secret to someone else when I might not be ready for all that. But you took it a step further and made a whole platform out of it. How did you jump from one to the next? Yeah.
I think ultimately I'll go broad and I'll thin it down. The broadness of it is just purpose. And I think that when purpose is really knocking on your door, it's hard to ignore. And it ultimately just waking up every single day like, right, how can I help someone break the silence today? And it's that consistently since 2018. Mm-hmm. So we're talking 6 years. Right. So it started off with my video on Facebook and then that kind of going viral. And then it came to TikTok. TikTok was really where things blew up. And we're talking back beginning days when TikTok became a thing and I shared my story on there. And at the time, it was literally just kids singing and dancing. That was it back then when it first became that TikTok. And I remember like, that's a ballsy move, Perry. A story on trauma. Right. Mm-hmm. Onto an app where it's just these kids. And I was like, no, but that's exactly who you need to speak to. So I did it and it just completely went viral and it just continued to go viral. And then from there, I was like, right, what's next? Then it was the book. And then from the book, what's next? Then it was the charity, what's next? And then with Instagram, it just, again, it's my story just keeps on blowing up. But then I turn it into a platform to help all these other survivors, you know, find their voice and share their story. And it's just repetition.
And the first post that you did, were you telling your story in full and people were just like, oh my God, I get this guy. And then would you start hearing from them personally? Like, how did you see that it was actually touching people as opposed to people were just forwarding it because they were like, oh my God, look at this. Look at how inappropriate this is. You know, something on the opposite spectrum of what you would want it to be.
Yeah. On TikTok, when it blew up, and this is no exaggeration, it was hundreds and hundreds, it was at least 100 DMs a day at the height of the virality of that video. But they would DM me on Instagram. So they came over to my Instagram to DM me. Oh, but wow. I remember it's interesting because this was the first time people were reaching out to me by the truckload. And I was reading these DMs, because there's one thing just having one person say, hey, you know, thanks for sharing your story. I'm going through this time. You just had the one person, or maybe one or two people. But then when you got 126 pending in your DM box, all very, very similar, I then became massively overwhelmed. And then I had this thing of like, I'm not Harry Potter with a magic wand that can just cure, you know. And then I really sort of went into that. I'm like, I can't heal your wounds. And then through a meditation a couple of weeks later, I was like, these people don't want you to heal their wounds. They just want to be heard.
Yeah.
And that's when I just fell into, you know, I put that hat on of just hearing and listening to them. And that's when I realized, okay, my story and the words I'm having to say and this movement that I can see slowly starting to build is actually making a difference for people.
And I love your concept of, you know, finding your purpose and following your purpose is so much more powerful than being stuck in your fear. I'm not saying it as well as you do. Can you just sort of explain what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's about making your purpose greater than your fears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Because especially when it comes to like writing a book, if you're like, well, I've been living in silence, blah, 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 I want to write a book, but keyword, but I want to start a business, but right, I want to do a podcast, but, and it's like, it's always fears. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's not about getting rid of the fears. It's about finding what the purpose is and then cranking the volume up on that so that it overpowers the fears. And you're like, yeah, I hear the fears, but I got to do it anyway.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk to people about how we can find 30 to 40 years worth of healing in less than a year's time. What are your suggestions for that?
That is writing a book. And very short story is that at the beginning of last year, I had a vision for, I'm an actor now. I always waiting to find my path to act. And I had this vision of me sitting at his desk, green lighting scripts, right? Like, yeah, this would be a great film. And then it just dawned on me in that moment about how these scripts can be books that I can help people write. Hmm. And then it all just came to me. And then that's when Powerful Books launched. So I launched Powerful Books specifically as a publishing company. Mm-hmm. And then after 10 or so people coming in and they've written their books, it wasn't, oh my God, I'm so happy that, you know, I've written a book. It was the healing that I've had. You know, I've been with a therapist for 20 years and I've had more healing than the first 4 weeks of joining in the 20 years. And now I've got research analysts inside the company who are compiling everyone's data whilst they're on a journey and before and after to turn that into a research paper so that when people are trying to find healing, it's not just therapy, it's not just counseling. And yes, journaling is a thing, but it's like, okay, let's put some sort of nitrous into that. And it's about writing a book, because with every single page that you write, you are confronting the truth of what happened. You're taking ownership of your story.
Yeah.
And then once you finish writing that book, and also with us, we have weekly calls with survivors and stuff. So it's not just writing a book. It's writing a book is also being a part of a community where you don't need to explain yourself, right? You're understood, you're seen already by people who get it. And then once you've finished, the one thing that you were scared about telling to one person, you've now turned that into a book and you're like, right, let's put this out there into the world. And it's a whole different version of yourself that you become.
I would think, I'm just curious about the logistics with that. I would think that would create even more fear with some of these people if they're not a writer, if they don't know how to verbalize their story, if they're thinking, oh my God, no one is going to buy this book. So how do you get over those hurdles in your publishing house?
So is anybody going to buy my book? It comes down to one, write the book for yourself. Mm-hmm. And then once you've gotten to the end of that journey, the version of you now with no book compared to the version of you with a book will be two completely different people. And allow that version of yourself to look at the world in a completely different way. Like, right now, I'm ready to help someone. But also at the same time, it's like, is there somebody out there that's been through something similar to you? Yes. Right. Cool. So if your book just helps one person, is it then all worthwhile? Yes. Done. Case closed. Right? Because if it just helps one person, and that's the attitude to have. Now, if you've not, we've currently, I think we've got 16, here's all of them here, right? We've currently got 16 books published and not one of them was a writer. And we've got 55, 56 people in our program. So at the moment, not one of them is a writer. They're just someone with a story to tell and they believe that they can help someone out there. And we have like step-by-step structures to follow. And it's like, before you even start writing your book, because a lot of people, they'll sit down with pen and paper and they'll start writing, but then they hit a brick wall, they'll word vomit, they don't know where to go from there.
Right.
And it's like, well, let's create a plan to follow before you even start writing the book. So then when you have the plan to follow, you know where you're going.
So you give them a little bit of an outline. So they're really writing these books. You're not doing the ghostwriting for them.
Oh, God, no, because that's not where the healing is. The healing is with them writing. Well, I will give them the structure to follow.
I see. So you really see this as a two-pronged thing. They are writing a book to maybe be successful in telling their story, maybe even getting something on the screen out of it, but also for them to heal by telling Correct. Their own story and writing it word for word.
Yeah.
And then eventually, do you have editors that do edit this down and make it into a real book that people will follow and like to read?
Yeah, yeah. So at the end, so they go on a whole little journey, which takes them anywhere between 3 to 6 months on average. Uh-huh. And then at the end, once they finish writing it and they got that ready draft, we then edit it for them, we format it, we design the cover, we then publish it for them, and then we give them a marketing pack at the end. So I create a story reel for them with their book in it with some marketing images for their book as well.
Okay, now I've seen some of this, like the clips of these books on your Instagram. So people can go to your Instagram and watch this. They are fascinating. First of all, the editing you do for those books is amazing, because now I have been like, oh my God, I have to read this book. But there That's was good. One that, well, actually, I want to hear from you. If you could just tell one story of someone that, you know, a book has been published or is coming out soon that really resonated with you that you want to tell us about.
Oh God, where do I start?
I know, I'm sure you love all of them. I'll tell you the one while you're thinking for me, watching on your reels. The one, and I'm going to get the girl's name wrong, but it was a girl who was sold, she was sexually trafficked basically by her mother for money. And she stayed with her mom while her mom did that. Then she got sold to a family in Germany. And she kept praying to be paralyzed. And then something happened where she did become paralyzed. All these terrible things. I was crying watching this, and it's like a minute reel. And then to see her face now and how powerful and strong she is, like, it's going to make me tear up talking about it. It was so good. I was like, that is an amazing story journey that should be on TV. Like, I was so proud of her. So anyway, that to me was one that stuck out, but give me one for you.
No, but that's the power of visual storytelling. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm so bloody addicted to it, because just in that 60 to 90 second clip, look at how it's left you. Now imagine a 60 to 90 minute film of it. It's like it would fucking change the world. Anyway, but this one here, they all fascinate me, but I'll tell you why I pulled her out. So we got this one here. Okay. And it's called My Lost Childhood. Her name's Kathleen Hebert, or just Kathy for short. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason why I brought up Kathy is because with her, she, I think she's 72 or 73 years old. Let's say 72. She's 72 years old. And she published this last year. And when she published it, that's when she broke her silence.
Wow.
And the reason why I said that's so powerful is because the longer you live in silence, the harder it is to break it. Mm-hmm. And if you're in your 60s, if you're in your 70s, then it's like, well, what's the point? I've lived my life this long in silence. I probably don't have that much longer left. Why do I need to do this now?
Right.
I get that from so many people, but with her, she grew up, she was abused by her parents, physically, emotionally, everything under the sun. Mm-hmm. And she was outcasted, and she lived her life just being just scum of the earth. Mm-hmm. And she did, you know, this whole journey, 60, 70 years later, that's when she was like, fuck this, fuck you, to her own parents, cut them out. I'm going to publish a book because people out there need to understand that it doesn't matter how many years you're living in silence for, it's time to break it, and it's time to break it today.
Wow, it's so powerful. And where can people buy these books, by the way?
So two options. So if you go onto the Instagram page, which is We Are Powerful Books, the link in the bio, it will show you all of our current published books so far. That's probably the easiest way to do it, because then you can follow our page and see the updates of everyone on there.
But are they things that will be sold on Amazon?
They're all on Amazon. Yeah.
They're all on Amazon. Okay, yeah. Great. So we'll give a link after this and people can go look at all those things. Okay, who over all this time have been some of your biggest influences or mentors, and what, you know, in your career and in your personal life, and what lessons did they teach you?
I think Lewis Howes was a big pinnacle point for me because of his book, Mask and Masculinity. So I think I definitely need to bring that up. And his thing was making me realize that what the path that I'd walked down was creating his mask. It was his conscious things to hide away. So the message that I took from his book and from that moment was to be brave and courageous and confront the past rather than running away from it. Mm. And then, even though it only happened recently, I read a book whilst on holiday called The Creative Act by Rick Rubin.
Okay.
And fantastic book because the nugget that I've taken out of it primarily is how I've understood it. It's to cut out all mentors, cut out all coaches, cut out all of these voices, especially me, because I've been listening to mentors and coaches for the last 11 years now. And it gets to a point where no way is the right way, because there's many ways to get to where you want to get to. Mm-hmm. And I definitely can lead to comparison, and I can lead to, you know, powerful productions, powerful books came from here. Yeah. But then if I see how someone else is doing it, then I'm like, oh, let me just slightly adapt to over here so I can follow their path. And sure. What Rick Rubin is saying is to be at the top, what to actually manifest what you vision, you need to follow a path where you don't exactly know what the next step is, but you need to have faith. And faith is a big thing for me. Trust in the universe that you will get there eventually as long as you don't give up. Right. And that's big for me at the moment.
Yeah. I'm curious, you know, you're talking about masculinity. You had such a complicated relationship with two men in your life, your step granddad, your father. What is your relationship with men now? Is it harder to trust them? Do you not have as many male friends? Like, how did that affect you?
Yeah, I don't get on the best with men now still. And it's interesting because I talk about this to my girlfriend all the time, and is that I trust women way more than I trust men. It takes me a little while to trust men. And if I, like, for example, clients, I'd rather have women over men. Mm. Right. And that's something that I've been trying to get over, because if I have a man on board and there is even a dosage of my dad in there, then my walls go up, my guards go up, and, you know, and I react rather than being. And it's definitely triggered me, for sure, the relationship, primarily my dad, not really my step-granddad, interestingly enough. So,
and is it easy for you to look at other men and see those qualities that, again, trigger you, whether it's you see the way that they treat other people, other men, other women, that also triggers you, that makes you stay away? Or do you want to kind of help those people and be like, we got to work on how you behave?
Truthfully, I think it's a bit of both. I think sometimes I'm like, I'm out of here, not interested. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I'm like, right, let's work on this, because there's a person behind the mask.
Yeah.
And that's something that I'm working on. Interestingly enough, every male that's come into Powerful Books are absolute diamonds, and there's no similarities to my dad. And but again, it's just that sort of lens that we've got to try to take off if it's not serving us, and replace it with one that does serve us.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Also, I want to ask you your views on the role of social media in spreading awareness about these kind of important issues. Has it helped you? Has it hindered you? Do you get, you know, what kind of comments are you getting? Is it stuff that people are really offended by, or stuff that people are like, wow, I needed to hear this?
100% social media has got me to where I am today. It's definitely been the fuel, and I know that it will continue to be. But now, like right now, probably this year, actually, I don't look at comments anymore of my reels. Don't even go on to, I go into my DMs all the time, 100%, but I don't go into comments anymore. Mm. And that's something that I consciously done, because what I would find, if something of mine goes viral, there's always going to be some hate comments. You know, but let's just say it's 5% hate, 95% is inspiration, blah, blah, blah. But with the hate comments, They either, for the most part, my dark sense of humor wants to come out, mm-hmm. and sort of react back to their comments. But then what I find is that it takes away time from when I could be helping someone else. And so basically that falls under the umbrella of reacting. So whether it's dark humor or whether it's reacting out of being pissed off or whatever it is, because I don't understand, it's still time that should be better spent than someone else. Kathy, actually, about an hour before coming on here, did a video. Her viral is blowing. It's got 6 million views at the moment. And she was like, you know, most of you people have been so inspirational, but I've just been in back and forth with somebody who just said that it was all a lie. And this is the thing that some survivors go through, you know, especially if you're going to be going viral. But the one thing I would say is that you just have to grow thick skin in this game, and you have to just ignore these comments, because they have their own worldview. And if you're going to try and change that, then you're beating a dead horse, rather than work on creating a new reel or helping someone else that needs it.
Right. So you've talked about powerful books. Talk about Powerful Productions. It's your impact-driven media company. Do you have any films in production at the moment?
No. So Powerful Productions, I launched at my 30th birthday. That was my sort of signal to the universe that now we're going to the next chapter, the next 10 years, entering my 30s. Now I'm going to be focusing on starting to turn these books into films. So I'm currently working on two pitch decks. This one, Fingered, and this is about a survivor who was born with a visual deformity, and she became a chiropractor. Right. Wow. So she was abused within her family, and she was turned away by professionals saying, you can't be a chiropractor. Like, come on, you know? Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, fuck this. Fuck you. I will do it. And then she ended up launching her own practice and now is majorly successful as a chiropractor. And that would be a stunning film. And so we have that one. And then we got a book at the moment that is all done. And this is just a reality. You know, she's domestic violence, and her ex-partner, the father of her kids, she managed to put him in prison. Oh, right? Wow. She collected loads of evidence, and horrific story, inspirational at the same time, but she put him in prison. Now he's coming out, and she's in this, you know, about publishing it or not publishing it because of, you know, he's now coming out with a record, and what's he going to do if he catches wind of the book, right? So, but that again, I'm turning that into a pitch deck, because that as a film would be incredible. So right now I'm working on the pitch decks. Once pitch decks are done, then I'll be moving on to getting funding.
Amazing. That's what I was going to ask you. So then you get funding, and then you try and send it to a, will you make it on your own, or will you try and get it picked up by a, you know, a major network or whatever to have them fund it? How does that work?
Well, I mean, in the beginning days, whilst there's no track record, that might be the case of having a big production company and then just us helping in some way. So at least Powerful Productions are a part of it. Until then, we have our own legs to stand on and people trust us. But it will be, at least in the long run, doing these ourselves. It will be a Powerful Production.
God, I just love this. I think it's amazing. All right. So what advice would you give someone who is struggling to come to terms with their past and is afraid to break their own silence, if they're listening right now?
Is that, if you feel like you are coping, or if you feel like you're, you know, some people are like, yeah, but I'm fine, or deep down they know they're not. And it's like, the life that you want to truly live, that life of emotional freedom, will not happen whilst you're staying silent, because that's where trauma thrives, in that silence, in that darkness. And deep down, you know it. So if you are living in silence, it's about taking the necessary steps to break the silence yourself first before you tell someone else. And alongside that, it will be, my recommendation is not try to do this overnight, but start to expand the current world that you're living in, and start to take in other components from the universe of things that do serve you. So like survivors who have similar stories to you that are living a powerful life that you want, because then day after day is a compound effect, and it starts to make you believe, hey, I can do that too. I can break my silence, and it will be okay. You know? And it's like, and one thing is, what, my family might disown me. My family might reject me if I break my silence. That's the biggest thing. My answer to that is, fuck your family. It's as simple as that. Because your family should be unconditional love. And as soon as conditions are brought in, which is stay silent, then the problem is not on you, the problem is on them. So if you do break your silence and they turn their back on you, they shouldn't have been in your life in the first place. That's the, you know, you deserve a different family. So that's basically stepping into your power and owning your story. And eventually you will get to where you want to.
Right. And then lastly, I just want to hear from your own words, because you say it so eloquently. How and why is it powerful to tell your story?
Because telling your story will not only help you to break through the chains that have been holding you back for so long, but it will also allow you to help that one person out there that needs it the most. And that one person out there that needs it the most will be the past version of you.
Love that. Okay. Tell people about your charity, We Together.
So We Together is a UK-based charity, and what we're working on at the moment is, the end goal is to increase prosecution rates and actually allow things to actually get to court, which is an issue in and of itself, and that could be every country in the world. But what we're doing now is we're building basically like a form that allows survivors to anonymously report what they went through. And what it does is, behind the scenes, AI is constantly looking for similarities amongst these submissions. And once it finds a cluster, which is two or more similarities, it creates that cluster, gets sent to the police. or a middleman that reviews it and then sends that to the whatever appropriate police department to then launch an investigation. Because as we know, very rarely does an abuser abuse just one person. Mm-hmm. So if it gets a lot of traffic, then there should be multiple stories of the same abuser, which then allows there to be not just one voice, but the voices of many.
Right. Amazing. All right. I want one more question about powerful books. If somebody wants to reach out to you, are you only taking certain submissions? How do you decide who you're going to work with? I know that people will be listening to this and say, even if I don't want to publish a book, this is a great exercise for me in being able to tell my story or get through things or write things out. How do I contact him so I can get that form he's talking about, that I could follow this outline and do it? Do you allow everyone to do it but not publish everybody? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, so we definitely have something where I'm like, the end goal isn't necessarily to publish the book to the world. The end goal to begin with is to write a book and publish it for yourself. That's it. You can be the only person on the planet that knows about it. Then you can decide if you want to publish it to the world. So there's that. But the people that we don't tend to work with is those people who want to write a book to make money, because that's not a guarantee. And when I say money, I mean big money. You know, you will make money every month from Amazon and send you your royalties. But it's about joining because you want to find healing and you want to find transformation on your journey and help that one person out there. Right. So if your values are there for doing it for the right reasons, then all you need to do is on Instagram, the We Are Powerful Books, it says on there to DM us book. And then what happens is you'll get an automated message. By the way, you can message me on Instagram. I am Perry Power, and I have an actual back and forth chat with me, no problem. But if you DM our Powerful Books Instagram page, then you'll get a like this one pager information with a 20-minute video that tells you exactly what we do at Powerful Books. And then if you're interested in moving forward, then it tells you what to do at the end.
Amazing. I love all of this. I think it's so interesting for people to listen to. I think you can offer a lot of help. I know you're not a therapist or a psychiatrist, but sometimes the stuff you do is just being able to connect with someone, and that can be even more powerful so that someone can feel seen and heard, you know, by someone that they're not necessarily paying, you know what I mean? So I thank you for what you're doing. I think you're so brave. I am so looking forward to seeing what's going to happen to you in the next 10 years. And I'm a fan. So thank you for coming on our show.
I appreciate it, Rachel. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.